about this.
These two
people.
I am geeking out.
To the Geeks Unleashed podcast.
Mark.
Jasmine.
What a nerd.
Nerd alert.
Unleashed.
Television.
What are you talking about?
Anything can be a podcast.
Video game.
Geek.
What is a geek?
Oh, hi, Mark.
The whole point is, of course, the plot is.
You guys have great conversation.
I am geeking out.
Unleashed.
Movies. People love movies.
All right, you guys, podcast time.
You're listening to the Geeks Unleashed podcast. Part of the BCP Bad Batch. We take our passions and our fandoms and we turn them into conversations with you.
Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. It's episode 153. I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
Each week on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we catch up on our pop culture lives as well as bring you a review of something adapted from the comic book or gaming world.
But before we get started, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We would love it if you would like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate that as well. We'd also love it if you'd leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.
Also, please feel free to donate to our Ko-Fi. All funds are appreciated. Yes. So jumping straight into this week's Geek of the Week. Before, if you've never listened before, Geek of the Week is just something that me and Jasmine have enjoyed on our own. So this week, I'm just going to shout out a follow-on from one I did a few weeks ago, which is Ultimate Spider-Man Issue 2 by Jonathan Hickman. So just a bit of a recap. The Ultimate Universe was something that formed in the early 2000s by various people, including Bendis, came to an end. I think it was around 2015. Two characters remained in the main Marvel Universe, 616, as comic book fans are aware of. One of those was the villainous Mr. Fantastic, known as the Maker. He decided in the summer of 2023 to go and create the Ultimate Universe again. However, because he's a villain, he denied a lot of heroes their origin stories. And one of those origins was Peter Parker. And by the way, that miniseries in the summer that came out was absolute awful trash and a mess. It was terrible, that miniseries. So I wouldn't even bother reading it. Just pick up issue one. Just know that he just created a new universe, and just that's it. And on the first page of the comic, they give you that lowdown. You don't need to read the miniseries. So the first issue, it ends with him getting bitten by the spider. This issue, we're getting more into it now. The first issue really was an overview of Peter Parker's world. You know, it was everyone in and around his world. And I did say the big twist here that Ben was alive whilst May was dead, which I thought was quite cool to see that the other way around. This time, just to fill you in, he's now probably early 40s, two kids, wife, married. Obviously, Ben and J. Jonah Jameson, they quit the Bugle at the end of the last issue because the Kingpin now owns the Bugle, and this issue we're getting to see him doing a lot of practice, swinging around the city.
Learning how to be a superhero at 40.
yeah, and so at the moment he doesn't have the Spider-Man costume, but he's wearing sort of a black costume. It's just sort of an all-in-one piece. And what's cool is I like the fact with this issue they go in really on the ground level in terms of villains. The villain he goes up against this issue is the Shocker. And he also gets suckered in by the Shocker twice because the Shocker, first of all, was like, oh, you know, I've learned my lesson. Actually, you're right. I shouldn't do this. And he's like, look, let's call it, call it evens, whatever he says. Puts his hand out to shake his hand. And then Peter Parker, because he's naive, puts his hand out to shake his hand, gets shocked. Gets flown across the building, whatever. Then later on in the issue, he comes across the Shocker again, but he's fighting him. The Shocker goes, oh, look, I'm only doing this because I need the money for, I can't remember what he says, like his wife or whatever. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker's like, stops and goes, really? And he's like, nah. And then shocks him again. And also there's some really sweet moments in there with his youngest daughter, who the issue starts off with her being scared of Spider-Man that's in the press. Spoiler alert here, by the end of the issue, she knows that he's Spider-Man, and it's quite sweet, but it's a sweet story, I think. I think as a 40-something-year-old man, whilst I don't, I'm not sure if I'd want to be a superhero. Well, no, I'll be honest, I would. If I got powers, I'd probably love it. So
I would not. I don't want to be bothered. Like, if I got powers at this age, somebody better watch out, because I'd probably be in jail. Like, I would definitely go villain route at this age. I'm not doing no superhero shit, man.
I wouldn't have time, really. Like, I'd end up like Peter Parker, like losing my job, losing my house.
Yeah. You would be the hero. I would be in my villain era. Then how would we do the podcast if you're a superhero and I'm a villain? Would we still be friends?
Well, you could be like Xavier and Magneto. Maybe they have like a truce here and there.
Okay. So. Okay.
But yeah. No. Anyway, it's really cool. The art is amazing as well. One thing I would say is, it's good. Like, honestly, it's really good. I just feel like it's too short. Like, and it probably isn't too short, but I love it. It's great. Like, yeah. I'll tell you what, because I know you're not a fan of the single issues. When they collect it, if you should read it, it's so good. Like, I think it's written so well as well. Jonathan Hickman, I know a lot of people love Jonathan Hickman. It's written so well. I was walking along earlier, walking the dog. I was actually thinking about it. I was walking along and I thought, it's actually quite nice to see this shift, like the adult parent Peter Parker becoming Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That's, for me, felt like a nice take on that story that we all are familiar with.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my geek of the week. I'm enjoying it, and let me know if you listeners or watchers are also enjoying it. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, definitely. Let him know, because you know Spider-Man is Mark's favorite, and he also likes Ben Reilly.
No Ben Reilly yet, but it's early not days. So.
What I think is funny about that, though, is like you're reading about that and Kingpin pops up, and obviously Kingpin is one of the villains in this movie that we're covering today. But like the whole backstory here was that for some reason, like they didn't have the rights. The whole rights thing. So like, because Daredevil used Kingpin, Spider-Man could never have Kingpin as a villain where Fox was concerned. And I was like, but why? Like, why couldn't there have been crossover, I guess? But back in the early 2000s, people were not friends. There was no crossover. We didn't do that back then. There was a lot of chatter about, well, why did you pull a Spider-Man villain into this film if you were never going to connect this film to Spider-Man? Because Spider-Man came out the year before this movie did, the first Tobey Maguire film. So, yeah, there was a lot of hubbub about Kingpin being here and not being in the Spider-Verse, so to speak. Okay, so my geek of the week. Nothing new. I am currently rewatching Haikyuu, which is one of my favorite animes. It's about volleyball. I love it. I played volleyball when I was in middle school. So it's always a little bit nostalgic watching Haikyuu. But like, I'm in the middle of doing a step challenge for this entire month of March. And so basically I just kind of throw on some stuff on my TV that I don't really have to pay too much attention to. I just use it as an excuse to get some steps in. So I restarted Haikyuu, and we're going to see how far I get during the step challenge watching Haikyuu.
It's probably a good idea. I started rewatching after last week, the original Quantum Leap. So, but like you, I'm not as bothered about it. Because I've already seen it. I'm not bothered if I'm giving it my full attention. So
yeah.
Whilst I am seeing things that I had forgotten. So.
Yeah. And, I'm watching this in Japanese. When I watched the original, the first time I watched Haikyuu, I watched it the English dub. So, I mean, that's the only difference, but not really.
Right, let's jump into our main event, which is Daredevil from 2023.
No, directed by.
Sorry, 2003. Sorry, apologies. I'm getting confused because we are 2024. 2003. Directed by Mark Steven Johnson, screenplay and story also by the man himself, based on characters from Marvel Comics.
Yes. And it stars these lovely people behind me in my background. Ben Affleck as Matt Murdock / Daredevil. Jennifer Garner as Elektra. Colin Farrell as Bullseye. Michael Clarke Duncan as Wilson Fisk / Kingpin. Jon Favreau as Foggy Nelson. Joe Pantoliano, I love him, as Ben Urich. Ellen Pompeo, forgot she was in here, as Karen Page. Scott Tara, he played the young Matt Murdock. Then we have David Keith, who played Jack the Devil Murdock, who is Matt Murdock's father. Leland Orser as Wesley Owen Welch. And Coolio as Dante Jackson. Fun fact, I met Coolio when I first moved to LA. He's very short.
He's no longer with us.
I know. Neither is Michael Clark Duncan either.
Well, no, I know, I know. Yeah. Also, we talked about him last week too.
I know, I know. I thought that was funny. This like early 2000s must have been, or the whole like 2000 genre must have been his like heyday.
Right, okay. So Daredevil first appeared in Daredevil issue 1, which came out in April 1964, created by Stan Lee and Bill Everett. Bullseye's first appearance was quite a long way later in Daredevil 131, which came out in March 1976, created by Marv Wolfman and John Romita Jr., Sr., sorry. Kingpin first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man issue 50, which was in July 1967, created by Stan Lee and John Romita Sr. Elektra first appeared in Daredevil in issue 168, which came out in January 1981, and she was created by Frank Miller.
Who were the villains before that, though? Because there's 100 some odd issues between Daredevil and Bullseye.
Yeah, these are obviously his big ones. I know he's got loads of other weird ones. Like
other little guys.
Like the Owl. Little
rogues gallery.
Yeah, yeah. Right, okay, so released on the 14th of February 2003. So the running time for the director's cut was 2 hours and 13 minutes, whilst the theatrical cut was 1 hour and 43 minutes. Had a budget of $78 million. Made a lot of money, made $179 million. So, whilst the theatrical cut is rated PG, the director's cut was given an R/18. So
yeah, they dropped a few F-bombs. All right, fun facts. Stan Lee, even though he made a cameo, he was in this film. Stan Lee said, what is quoted as saying, he didn't like this film because he thought that the plot was too tragic. And everybody was like, but didn't you help create these characters? I'm confused, Stan. He didn't like it. He's one of millions. Millions of people did not enjoy this film. So Stan Lee is definitely not alone there. I thought this was funny. This not really too related to this film, but like Ben Affleck had such a hard time with the costume for this film that he came out and said, I'm never doing no superhero shit again. And sure enough, when DC came a-calling, 10 years later, he was like, yeah, sure, I'll be Batman. Which I thought was really funny. Because they had a whole bunch of stuff lined up for a reboot, or not a reboot, like a sequel to this film.
Yeah.
And Affleck refused. He was like, I am not coming back. And they didn't want to recast the role so quickly. And they ended up running out of time. Because again, the whole thing with the rights and the time sensitivity that comes with buying the rights to something. And they fought and pushed and they just could not get another Daredevil film made. And because they lost the rights, that is how Marvel and Netflix got their stuff going in, what was that, 2015?
Yeah, I can't remember around then.
Yeah, so that's how we got that, is because they lost the rights because they couldn't get their stuff together to get another movie in. Casting. Okay, this is always my favorite part, right? So this is very bizarre to me. So Colin Farrell was actually up for the role of Daredevil long before Ben Affleck signed on. And Ben Affleck had been going for the role of Bullseye before he ended up before they ended up flipping and then they got each other's roles. Like, I don't know how that really happened or how that played out, but I thought that was super strange. Guy Pearce was also considered for the role of Daredevil. He turned it down. He said, I'm not really into superhero movies, and then turned around 10 years later and did Iron Man 3, but he was a villain, not a hero. Sure. Vin Diesel was approached to play Matt Murdock. That would have been very interesting. He said no, and he did the sequel to Pitch Black, which was Chronicles of Riddick instead. Eliza Dushku was up for the role of Elektra. And also Ben Affleck's BFF, Matt Damon, before Ben Affleck was considered for the role of Daredevil. And I was like, ooh, that could have been a good one. I think Matt Damon as Daredevil could have worked pretty well. And now I can't unsee it. And there were tons and tons and tons of comic references in here. I mean,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Like when his dad was boxing, he fought a lot of boxers that had comic name. He fought a guy named John Romita. He fought a guy named Kane. He fought a guy named, where am I? Miller. There was a Mac. There was a Bendis. All these guys all wrote.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that when it came out. I was like, oh, there's so many random characters named after people that had long and significant runs on the Daredevil comic.
Yep. Yep. So we had Frank Miller, who was on Daredevil from 79 to 83. David Mack was on Daredevil from 99 to 2001. Brian Michael Bendis was on Daredevil at the time that this film was released. Then you had, there was a reference to a guy named Quesada. And at the time, Jose Quesada or Joe Quesada was the editor in chief of Marvel. There was a priest that was named after another writer, Bill Everett, who was on Daredevil from 64 to 72. And then, of course, Kevin Smith played a coroner, and his character's name was Kirby, obviously after Jack Kirby. And Jack Kirby was on Daredevil from 64 to 69. So there were tons of comic references thrown throughout this film, which I got a kick out of. I had no idea who any of those people were when I first saw this movie in 2003, but I recognize those names now.
Oh, no, I remember being in the cinema, like, I can't believe all these names coming out. Mm-hmm. That was cool. So, and Kevin
that's Smith's what I got also for fun facts.
I was going to say, Kevin Smith's also written some Daredevil as well. No, I do remember with the cancelled sequel you were referring to, I knew that Ben Affleck wouldn't come back. But I remember them talking about doing a sort of Fox before they lost the rights. So they were talking about doing a sequel. I think it was going to be set in the 70s, like a Daredevil sort of 70s style movie or something. And they were really, I think, scrambling before they lost the rights. And then they lost the rights. And bye-bye. So it's probably a good thing.
I don't think anybody is sad that this film didn't get a sequel. Like, it made its money back at the box office, but I don't think that means that this movie was successful.
No. I think the opening weekend was really good. And then I read that the following weekend, audiences dropped by over 50%. However, we're still in top place the following weekend because it still did well. But 50% drop from first weekend, second weekend is pretty huge. So,
yeah.
Right. The IMDb summary. A man blinded by toxic waste, which also enhances remaining senses, fights crime as a acrobat, martial arts superhero. A man blinded by there you go. It's a real short line.
There is, you guys can't see it, there is no punctuation in this sentence, like no commas, no nothing. Oh my god, this one is almost as bad as the one from last week. That one from last week was terrible.
Let me reread it. Let me give it another go. A man blinded by toxic waste, which also enhances remaining senses, fights crime as an acrobat, martial arts superhero. That's just nothing about this movie.
It could be anything. That could be any superhero movie. It does not have to be Daredevil.
Yeah.
Acrobatic martial arts superhero. Who writes this? I at this point, I'm now convinced that ChatGPT writes the IMDb summaries and not an actual human.
IMDb are not very good at their summaries. Right, so before this movie, or any, obviously before 2023, what was your knowledge of Daredevil?
I had none whatsoever.
None? Okay. Nope. Let's go home and send the podcast now. right, no, so I remember, I don't know if you remember the TV movies of the Incredible Hulk and the TV series that they had in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, the one with, what's his name, Joe? The live-action Hulk? I remember
So after the TV series finished, they released a series of individual movies. One of them was called The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. I don't know. Do you remember that?
Nope.
Daredevil was in that movie.
Oh. Was he the lawyer?
It came out in 1989. I think he was. Do you know what? I don't remember much about it.
Good grief. No, I definitely don't remember that.
I don't remember much about it. I just remember Daredevil being in it and having a much more toned down outfit. So I remember that was kind of my first ever Daredevil, you know, thing.
Yeah.
However, before 1998, so I started reading comics around 1994, and I didn't read any Daredevil. And then in 1998, Joe Quesada launched a line of comic books called Marvel Knights.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like adult-ish, you know, people could have picked it up that weren't adults, but it wasn't like their Max line, which was purely adults. Marvel Knights, though, was, they kind of deemed it as their quality book line, and they released quite a few premium books under it, but the most popular was Daredevil. So Quesada obviously illustrated Daredevil, and it was also written Kevin Smith as well, and wrote some of it, and then it eventually Bendis took over that run. So from 1998, I started reading it. I'd never read Daredevil at all before, but I thought it was brilliant. Quite early on into it, they kill off Karen Page. And I, at the time, that didn't really mean much to me. Bullseye killed Karen Page. So that's one of the reasons I'm dreading this new TV series coming back, because Bullseye's but there. And apparently Karen Page isn't going to be in that many episodes. So I hope they don't. I really, really hope Karen survives. If they,
I don't know, man. She might not make it. She might not make it.
Right. So that I love that. Honestly, that Daredevil series, like that started from the Marvel Knights run, is brilliant. I think most people love that run. So that was my initial thing, and I was really excited to go to the movie and see this. So that brings us to my next thing. Had you seen this before, and when did you see it? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we saw it when it came out. Like, we went to the theater to see this, and I distinctly remember walking out of the theater and being so upset at the person who suggested that we go see it. And I was like, that movie was so bad. And for years, like, it within my friend group, it was an argument, because most of us really liked the Spider-Man that came out in 2002. And, of course, like, the one that came out, the sequel, but like there was always this debate with our friends about which film was better, Spider-Man or Daredevil. And only one of us, like, we were a group of 11, and only one person of the entire group was like, Daredevil was so much better than Spider-Man. And we were just like, what movie did you watch? Because no, it was not. There was nothing about this film that was better than Spider-Man. And even to this day, like 20 years later, we're still like, so do you still really think that Daredevil, and she's like, yeah, Daredevil was absolutely better than the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And we're just like, oh my God, you're wrong.
Maybe she was drunk.
I mean, or sleeping. I have no idea. I don't see it. It does not compute. So yes, I saw this in theaters when it came out, and I disliked it immediately back then. And it didn't get any better this time around. This is only my second time.
So I went to see it in, I remember even where I went to see it, I went to the cinema in Kingston, which is probably no one knows where that is, but just sort of out of London. I remember even going with my friend Nicola to see it, and we went, I can even remember going to the pub afterwards. And just brings me naturally into what my overall thoughts of the movie are. So first watching it, I was really hyped because I was loving the comics that were out at the time. And I'll be honest, there's bits I like in this movie. There's stuff I don't like in this movie. As the comic book fan that I was, though, going into it to see the theatrical cut, I loved all of the references of Bendis, Miller, Quesada, you know, all of the names. I was catching them all. I was like, no way. I was like, what? Like, that was cool. So, and then I remember going to the pub afterwards, and I have felt this a few times, a bit like watching the fourth Matrix and Spider-Man and Spider-Man 3 and stuff like that. Just this, you go in really hyped and then you walk out afterwards and you sit down and you're like, you're trying to make it in your mind. You're trying to reconcile that you want it to be a good movie. You're like trying to almost talk yourself into it because you wanted it to be a good movie before you went in.
Yes.
You want to walk out and be like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, though.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Yeah. Yeah, no. Like, anyway, so overall thoughts. I remember actually sitting down just trying to convince myself it was a good movie, like for ages, like in the pub. And
how'd that work out for you?
And I've seen this a few more times than you. I have rewatched it. And then when I heard a couple of years later they released a theatrical cut, I remember rewatching that. And I thought, actually, no, I prefer this. I thought this is actually a stronger movie, much stronger than the original one. So in all honesty, overall, this is a terrible film. It doesn't matter whether it's theatrical or director's cut, it is a terrible film. I think the director's cut, I think, is stronger than the theatrical cut. I think the addition of the Coolio storyline, which we'll talk about later, is a really good addition because it adds the lawyer part of his story. Mm-hmm. And it also gives Foggy a little bit more to do in this than rather than just being Matt Murdock's psychic.
Yeah.
Because there's some scenes on his own where he's trying to do the investigation. Although they do
very much describes himself as a plus one, not the main character. So
I mean that's what he is in the movie. And they do really dress him up as a prat, if I'm honest, and completely unlike what we see in the TV series. Overall, it's a bad film. There's some good actors in there. And really weirdly, I think Ben Affleck has got much better as an actor. But in this movie, he is the worst part about this film. There's no getting away from it. He is absolutely awful in this movie. And it just watch it.
Better be careful what you say, Mark. He is breathing down your neck right now.
Oh, yeah. On the YouTube, on the picture behind me. Right. He's just so awful. Like, as an actor, just really abysmal. Now, look, I've seen some other things of, like, you know, where the town and, there was another film I saw where Argo, brilliant. The Town and Argo, brilliant. But I think he was behind those movies. And what I think one of the things I realised about Ben Affleck, if he's involved in some capacity, he's actually quite good as an actor. Now, I do think he was a good Batman. I'll give him that. But in this movie, honestly, he just phoned it in. It was like he thought he was in a rom-com. I think he thought the role he'd gone for was in some sort of 90s rom-com movie. And on the day, they said, well, actually, no, you're in Daredevil. And he's like, oh, okay, all right. So do I still do the rom-com part of it? Like, that's kind of... And I think you thought Matt Damon was in it and they were just goofing around. I think he thought it was one of those movies. I don't think he realised what he was in. I'm not convinced. So,
I think Daredevil being completely rewritten now as a rom-com. Instead of a superhero movie.
It's just, you know what, a lot of the time it was his facial expressions. Violence will go through your mind when you see his facial expressions throughout the movie. Honestly, the weird smirk that he had. And honestly, that park scene is one of the worst scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Actual movie history. Not just superhero films, just that scene
ever.
In any movie is one of the worst scenes of all time. It's just so ridiculous. Like, and also, what annoyed me about it as well is just his weird controlling. He almost came across like a psycho boyfriend.
Yeah,
like she walks into a coffee shop. Yeah, she walks into a coffee shop. She doesn't want to give her name. So he follows her down the street. How many times did he grab her? Yeah, he fights with her in a park, which for some reason, like, leads to some sort of date. And how many times does he grab her arm? I just want to know your name. Do you know what, mate? Just do one. I just thought it just, so irritated. Well, the Matt Murdock we get in the TV series, like, women throw themselves at him because he's so much more chilled. Oh, yeah.
Charlie Cox is ridiculously charming as Matt Murdock. Like, and Ben Affleck has none of that charm in this film. None whatsoever.
No. So, anyway, what's your overall thoughts?
Back then, I remember disliking this movie because I thought that the CGI and the effects was just so subpar. Like, that fight sequence in the park was terrible. A lot of the fight choreography was poorly timed, and I didn't enjoy that. A lot of the, oh my God, and especially that scene where he's fighting Bullseye on the giant organ at the church, I was just like, how did this even make it to a final cut? Like, this is bad. So I didn't like that. This movie to me didn't give me anything to sink my teeth into. There was no plot. The characters weren't really that likable. Like, you didn't even have a chance to get to know anybody. And for the villains, like, you didn't have a chance to decide whether or not you were on their side or not. And because, you know, I love to root for the villains. And so, like, they're powerful, so to speak, in the context of the film itself. But, like, as far as screen presence, not so much. Like, I never understood why they made Bullseye so awkward. Like, he can't even have, like, a conversation. Like, his entire first introduction is just him, like, grunting at these people in the pub. And it's like, does he speak? Like, what? Why aren't you talking to the... Like, it was so weird. So, it just... I don't know. But also, coming off the high of Spider-Man from 2002... It was just like, this movie didn't even get anywhere close to that feeling of how much fun that Spider-Man film was. Even though I do think that the second Spider-Man film is much, much, much better. I had expectations because Spider-Man was so good. I was super pumped. Like, okay, like this could be a good thing. And it was not. It, like, the plot was non-existent. The one-liners were terrible. The script was just it didn't give you much to like.
No. And I think, actually, leading into the part where we talk about characters, I think one of the biggest problems with this, and so many the Marvel and DC superhero films of the time would make the mistake of ramming every single character they could think of into a movie. And, mm-hmm. You know, we've got Kingpin, we've got Daredevil, we've got Bullseye, we've got Elektra. There's obviously other characters in there that make up a lot of subplots. We could have had, obviously, we needed a Daredevil origin movie because, like yourself, you didn't know Daredevil. But we didn't need everybody else, you know. We could have just had one person. I don't think this movie should have even had Elektra. It shouldn't have had. If they really wanted to,
no Elektra, no Bullseye. You could have done a lot with just Murdoch and Kingpin.
Yeah. Oh yeah, completely. A lot with both of them, and actually increase the role of Karen Page and not make a
secretary and nothing else.
Well, yeah. I mean, I understand that was the role that she kind of has in even the TV series. She starts off as a sort of secretary admin person, but then in the TV series, she becomes very much an integral part of the show and of the firm, and to the point where they put her on the name on the door. So, do you have a favorite character?
If I had to pick, to answer the question, no. I don't really have a favorite character, but of the people that were in this film, if I had to pick one, it would be Kingpin. Because I felt like he was the only one that actually played up to what you expected of a villain. Like, he was the guy that threw the money around. He was the guy that threw bodyguards around. Like, he played the part of big, scary guy with a lot of money. And I mean, in general, like, I loved Michael Clark Duncan. So if I had to pick, it would be him, because I felt like he was the only guy that read the script and was like, okay, I get it. I see what you're trying to get out of this guy. And I think he gave us that.
I think my favorite is actually, do you know what? I actually do think Jennifer Garner did well. I think she's a great actress anyway. And however, my favorite is a real, real minor role in this. Ben Urich.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure you say his surname. Joe Pantoliano. Yeah, there you go. He's an amazing TV actor. So many things he shows up in television, and I think he's great. And I thought he was really good as Ben Urich in this. And I loved his, especially in this cut, where we had a lot more of him in the courtroom scenes with Coolio and the interactions between him and Matt Murdock. I loved his subplot the most, and I love the fact that right at the very end, he decides to not out Daredevil. He sees the benefit of actually keeping secret identity.
Keeping that in your back pocket.
That's going to be a lot more useful, keep sitting on that rather than exposing it.
Exactly.
Exposing that's a bit of a one.
It's a one-time use once you expose it, but if you keep it in your back pocket, I mean, that's like infinite favors.
Oh, that's worth a lot of money, that. Yeah, currency. Yeah. That's probably a lot worth more in terms of stories, surely.
Yeah.
And
see, the biggest thing for me is, like, I disliked this movie so much. And this is the first time I've seen the director's cut. So, like, I don't know the differences here. So I don't know if
the main difference is called
better.
Okay, so the main difference here with the plot lines, and again, this is one of the biggest problems here. I think there's too much going on. There's too many plots. There's obviously everything going on with Elektra, her father, the later on the father dying, the revenge, then her dying herself. Bullseye is pretty one note. Okay, you know, get me Bullseye. Like, and, yeah. Anyway, it kills some guy in a pub, gets on a plane, kills someone on a plane, shows up, he has a bit of a temper tantrum I never miss, and ends up killing Elektra. Then ends with quite a big battle with Daredevil before he may or may not be dead, before Daredevil runs off to fight the Kingpin. Then they got the Kingpin killed Daredevil's father, is responsible for Elektra's dad dying, and he's also responsible for, obviously through other people, but the killing of that the prostitute, which Coolio's been framed for, and Coolio's obviously his whole subplot, which they cut out from the theatrical cut, where he played Dante Jackson. He's charged with the killing of a prostitute who was feeding Urich info on the Kingpin. That's why he got killed off. And that's actually what leads to Daredevil then going to the Kingpin, is that plot, which they cut out for the movie. The other plot line you've got is the origin part, where we see a lot of the young Matt Murdock with his father, getting hit by the chemicals, and then seeing him. The other terrible scene in this movie is the young Matt doing the backflips in the alleyway.
How do you know how to do that? Just because your senses are heightened doesn't mean you can fight.
I know, it's ridiculous. Like, he's blind, and yeah, okay, he now can smell, you know, something five blocks down the road and hear something, you know, on the other side of the city or whatever.
I don't remember him having these Superman abilities before.
No, he was trained, like, as we know from the comics and the TV show, he was actually went through, like, a bit like Batman went off to get trained. Daredevil also was trained by Stick, so the character of Stick, who has no appearance in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of characters they put in this, they may as well put Stick in there as well. So
yeah, no, instead they want you to think that this 11-year-old kid can just magically, like, lose his eyesight and then do aerial acrobatic karate, like, in the alleyway.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of plots going on. And with that said, I just sort of wondered what your thoughts were and if you had any favorite plot lines ran through it, or just, you know, or any that you didn't think were great.
I mean, didn't think.
Probably all of them.
A lot of them. I did not. Actually, I did enjoy the origin that we got at the beginning of the film. I thought it's very typical, like, superhero origin story. Obviously, you know, something tragic is going to happen. And then on top of something tragic happening when he loses his eyesight, then you find out his dad works for Kingpin, and then he's supposed to throw a fight and he doesn't, and then he dies or he gets murdered. So it was very cliche. It's like A, B, or C, like pick your comic book hero introduction. Like A, dead parents. B, like yeah. You know, it was very cliche and obviously very something that we're all very familiar with. But I thought that those actors that were playing those characters did well. And so I enjoyed that piece at the very beginning. Everything else, not so much. I didn't enjoy the way that Daredevil and Elektra came to be. Bullseye was just this weird mumbly dude. Kingpin was, I mean, like, just a big mobster, you know? I don't know. I didn't. And then, of course, Foggy was literally just comic relief. Like, he had no other purpose other than comic relief.
I mean, he's comic relief in Spider-Man as well, so...
Oh, okay.
Not Foggy. What's his name? John Favreau. He's the same in everything. He's in. Hey, yeah, it's Happy. Literally, Foggy and Happy are the. He plays them the same. He has no range as an actor.
That's why he's better behind the camera.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I know he does a lot more behind the camera. He can't act for love nor money. He just plays himself, I think.
Pretty much. Yeah, that works for some people. That does not work for everyone. Like,
it doesn't work for him.
Samuel L. Jackson always plays Samuel L. Jackson, and that works. Like, you don't want Samuel L. Jackson in your movie if you don't want Samuel L. Jackson in your movie. You know what I mean?
It's the same. Like Morgan Freeman is the same.
Yeah.
Denzel Washington plays the same character in everything he's in, but people pay him for it. And
yes,
same with what's his name, the actor who's in everything, Crank, you know,
Jason Statham.
he plays the same everything he's in as well, but you love him for it. John Favreau, no, sorry, it's boring and it's done. I'm sorry, just stop acting.
Direct more stuff. Go back and direct more Marvel stuff, because Iron Man was fantastic.
If he wants to carry on being happy, that's fine, but you know, it'd be weird when the multiverse happens, like during, you know, Deadpool 3, when Elektra shows up in the Marvel universe and she sees Happy. That would be confusing for her.
My God, they should do that. And yeah, should confuse Chris Evans with the Human Torch. That would be amazing.
It'd be brilliant if Elektra lands in the Marvel universe, Spider-Man and Foggy are standing there, Happy are standing there, and she's like, Foggy? Anyway, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of plots. I would say I actually do love the addition of the Coolio storyline, because I like the fact that we actually get some legal courtroom stuff, because Matt Murdock is a lawyer. Foggy's a lawyer. However, he doesn't seem like he's a very good one. But I do love that we get some more courtroom scenes. You know, we're not just relying on the opening scene that we had at the very beginning, and that in the theatrical cut was the only real courtroom scene we got. At least by the addition of Coolio's storyline and him being framed for murder, we got to see some actual courtroom scenes that they were connected to the Kingpin, but it seemed like a separate case until the end, and I quite liked that. And I'm not saying it doesn't make the movie amazing or anything, but I liked that we had that, and I think they should have been brave enough to put that in the theatrical cut. So in regards to the origin, it was all right. It was standard. My only real criticism is the dad, in terms of his stupid name, the Devil. He's not called that in the comics. He's called Jack Batlin. Jack Batlin Murdoch or something like that. He's not called the Devil at all. That changes like that annoy me, and it's a cheap thing, because you're like, oh, that must be where he got his name from, Daredevil. Right, that is stupid. Right, let's move on from that subject. Right, the music in this movie.
Oh, the early 2000s. Wow.
Yeah.
It took me back, that's for sure.
I know. I loved it. Evanescence and everything. I know.
It was like great. The Evanescence and Nickelback combo of like just that alternative rock early 2000s. Yeah, very. I forgot how much Evanescence like was popular back then. And in this film, they've got two Evanescence songs in this film.
My Immortal and obviously the classic Bring Me to Life.
Yeah, when Elektra's training.
I love that though. I thought it was cool. Like the music and the scene. I know again, it doesn't suddenly make me want to give it a 5 by any means, but seeing her like with her size and getting the sandbags and the Evanescence is playing, I was into that. This is where music helps scenes though. Did you love the soundtrack?
I mean, it was very indicative of the time. So to me, watching the film now, it feels very dated. Like the songs just weren't classic enough.
Yeah. So we kind of alluded to earlier things we would change in this movie. For me, if I was to cut it or change it, I probably would have just deleted it, but I would actually really bring it down. I would make Foggy a stronger character. I wouldn't make him a goofball. I probably actually would recast him. I think Foggy needs to be recasted. I would obviously keep Foggy. I would make Karen Page's role stronger, and I think Ellen has shown a huge range in Grey's Anatomy, so she would have been able to actually carry a stronger role. I would have got rid of Bullseye, would have got rid of Elektra. They could have been maybe some couple of smaller low-level villains brought in instead, if they needed some cannon fodder at the beginning. But I think it would have been a good Kingpin movie, and maybe end it with him going to prison or something or other like that. The tone should be different. It should have been a much darker movie. You know, we had Blade around that time. It was slightly earlier, didn't we have Blade? If we were brave enough to do an 18 for Blade, couldn't they have just been brave enough to do an 18 for Daredevil off the bat?
No. They got lucky. But these are not the kinds of films that draw in that kind of audience.
I think now they would. I think Daredevil, if they released an 18 now, Daredevil, people would do it. Charlie Cox, they gave a movie, people go. They would. People love Charlie.
I would, but I don't. I'm with the executives on that one. I don't see that being as profitable because you're cutting your audience.
Oh. Well, they've released all those TV series on Netflix that were fairly adult. So, and they did really well. So I know that's different TV because unfortunately people underage also have access. But I don't know. I think Charlie Cox Daredevil movie, even if they made it a 15, would be like well received.
Yeah, I mean it would be PG-13. But like if of all the people that they pulled over, the only one that could work as an R would be Punisher.
Oh, Punisher would have to be an 18 now.
Punisher would work as an R. Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. There's no reason for it. They don't need it.
I would also recast Ben Affleck. He was awful in this film. I stand by that. I do think he's improved as an actor, but he honestly is absolutely awful in this film. There's no way of script. Like, there's no ifs or buts. I'm sorry. He's just abysmal. Right. So what about you? Anything you might change?
I would beef up the villains. I would make them scarier. I would make Bullseye actually use his words and not just mumble random things. Mm-hmm. And I would have taken away Matt Murdock being a stalker. That would not have
been. Oh, yeah, that. Yeah. That weird thing.
Yeah. And then the fact that, like, back then, there were, like, women were like, oh, he's so nice. I'm like, girl, he just followed you from the damn coffee shop and then tried to fight you in the playground. What do you mean he's so nice? What the hell?
And like the play, the fighting, you can put down as some weird play around thing. But then the fact that even after it's all done, he grabs her arm again. Like, you know, how many times do you have to grab this woman's arm? Like, you're blind also. Like, where did you know the arm was? Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, the sixth sense that you've got. the sixth sense that allowed you to do backflips at the age of 10. So, again, that's just ridiculous. There was a lot of lazy writing in this. That's yes. what I think. A lot of lazy writing. A lot of jumps that were made that no one could have put together other than the writer just thinking, I can't be bothered to actually do the work on this.
Yeah, and there's not even any like build-up. And not just like in the romantic relationship. There's no build-up to any of these things. It's like, I don't even understand, like, why you're mad at each other. Like, what is the problem? How did we get here? Like, this film doesn't give you the time to build any kind of emotional attachments to the characters. Like, things happen and then the characters get sad about it, but it's like, as the audience, you're just like, I don't care that guy died. Like, I don't care.
I felt to me like this movie was, somebody thought, we're never going to get to make a Daredevil movie again, so we're going to put every single thing we can put in it. And that way it gives everybody a whistle-stop tour of what Daredevil is.
No, that's not how you do it.
Right, in 2003, there was some best movie on people's best of movie lists. I thought I'd do this as we did on the last couple of films. And you can see the difference here. So I'm not going to shout them all out, but Kill Bill Volume 1 was on a lot of people's best ofs. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Lost in Translation, Love Actually, Finding Nemo. Now, those are all really amazing, utterly amazing movies. So,
Lost in Translation, that movie was terrible.
I have seen it, but I can't remember that. That's the only one I've not rewatched, but the others I've rewatched loads. Kill Bill, I've watched so many times. and Return of the King, I've watched.
Oh my God, Return of the King, I could not even get up out of my seat in the theater. Like, I was crying so hard, like, at the end of that movie.
I've re-watched those recently, all of the Lord of the Rings, the extended edition, the four-hour movies.
Yes.
They're just all amazing. They're a lesson to the Daredevil team of, these are how you put movies together. He doesn't even have to be as grand as Lord of the Rings. Look at Kill Bill. That was well put together movie. Right, on some worst of lists.
Everybody's favorite film of 2003. Like, everybody loved to hate on this movie, the Geely movie with Affleck, with Bennifer, as they were called.
I've never seen that film. That didn't appeal to me.
What is his name? Justin Barra is really good in it. He plays the autistic brother of Ben Affleck. Character in that film, and he's really good, but outside of that, no one else is there's nothing else good about that movie.
So obviously all these worst of lists normally include like 50 movies or something. I'm not going to shout them all out, but I grabbed three random ones. Kangaroo Jack, The Cat in the Hat.
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
But this one, I do not agree with.
I disagree.
Well, I disagree with this one too. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I loved that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. I've watched that movie loads.
Oh, yeah. I have seen that movie at least 20 times, at least.
Oh, I love that movie. Well, we should add that to our ever-growing
list. It is based on comics.
All right, so it is based on comics. Right. Of those, I'll be honest, I've never watched... I don't know. Maybe The Cat in the Hat is probably one of the worst ones for me. But if I was to throw them all up there, including Daredevil, Daredevil would be the worst. So.
Oh no! I'm gonna leave Cat in the Hat on that list. I think that's probably a worse film than this one.
Oh really? Okay. I've not actually seen Cat in the Hat, so I don't know. Cat in the Hat to me is a film I would never watch because it looks so bad. I'm not gonna work.
Oh my God! It was like, Mike Myers at the time could not drop Austin Powers. And so it was literally like you had put Austin Powers in the Dr. Seuss universe, and it was the weirdest thing. It was just so bizarre.
Okay, so let's bring the review to a close.
Okay.
So out of 5 from 1, or what actually you can obviously do a 0, 0.5 to 5? Is there any grade that, or you know, just to, before you actually grade it, would you have graded it differently 20 something years ago to now?
I probably would have been harsher back then.
Okay.
So I think probably back then, because this came right on the heels of Spider-Man, this probably would have gotten a 0 in 2003. But now I'm gonna give it a 1.5.
Before I rate it, actually, there's something I want to say. There's actually, and I know you're going to say to me, it's weird that I highlight this as something I like. But you know, at the end of the movie, like the last couple of minutes where he runs into Urich and outside the courtroom, and then you see him walking down the street, Matt Murdock that is, and then you see him up on the roof and then finds the little necklace with Braille on, which obviously alludes to Elektra being alive. And actually, yeah, everyone's kind of been defeated, and he has coffee with Foggy again, and that sort of last 5-10 minutes of the movie is very quiet, him sort of walking around the neighborhood. And I actually really liked that. I thought that was actually quite nice to have, because I've watched a lot of crap movies where they just end, like the sort of the action part's done, and you know, you sort of the main hero's just, you know, watching the villain get arrested, and then the titles come up, and I'm like, but what next? Like, yeah, you've had this whole build up to this confrontation, but what's, you know, you've not seen you reunited with your family, you've not seen. I want to know what happens after this, because, you know, we've become invested in all these characters for the last hour and a half or whatever, and the guy just got, the cards blew up or whatever, and that's it, titles come up, and that they could have so easily have just done that, defeating Kingpin and just ended it. And I liked that last 10 minutes of actually sort of going back to normal and just sort of seeing people. I don't know, I quite liked it. It wasn't, you know, it's not going to change my grade or anything, but it just felt like a nice moment to have there. I did think that was quite nice. I'm not going to, I know it's not, there's a lot in this film, but I think I enjoyed the quiet part, maybe because the whole film is really rushed and busy. Yeah. And that, have that real quiet moment at the end, I thought was great. It's not going to make me give it a 5 by any means. So,
there were parts that I like. I really liked Matt and Foggy's interactions, because to me, a lot of that felt more ad-libbed than anything else. And I thought him and Jon Favreau played well off of each other. So I did enjoy, especially the mustard in the coffee. Like, I know that's a super cheesy gag, but like, that really made me laugh. Like, because that seems like something me and my friends would do to each other.
I do agree. The interactions between the two of them are really good. Like when Elektra walks in, he's like, you know, and he's like, oh, she's hideous. You know,
yeah.
You know? I thought that was great. But again, he does that kind of humor in Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's obviously who he is. But I do agree with you. The interactions between the two of them are great. And yeah, there are parts in this movie I like. And to summarize, there are some good parts in this movie. You know,
which is why I'm being a little more generous in 2024 than I would have been in 2003.
I think I feel like probably the other way around now. Like when I watched it initially, I probably would have given this a 3 or something. Now I rewatching it, I think unfortunately it's not aged well. In fact, it's aged quite badly.
Yes.
And actually, I realized when I watched it, I now remember all the memes that came out when Affleck got announced as Batman. And it was like, literally, I don't know if you remember the day that happened, the internet just blew up with laughter. And actually, when I watched this, I was just like, this is why people blew up, because you were just awful. Anyway, I'm going to give it a 1 out of 5 as well. It's just a terrible movie. It doesn't matter whether it's theatrical or not. Well, actually, I think the director's cut probably gives it the 1. If it was the theatrical cut, gives it a 0.5. Director's cut, I'll give it a 1. Theatrical cut, 0.5. I think that Coolio storyline is a good addition.
And there you have it. That's that on that.
Yeah. I may and we never watch this movie again.
Yes, cheers. Cheers to that.
Cheers. Right. Geeks and Niche, next week, episode 154 will be, I mean, you're going to guess what it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's going to be Elektra.
We're torturing ourselves again. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Elektra, 2005. So, right, you can follow us on social media. We're everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, X, as they call it now.
Yes.
That's it.
Get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify, we are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
Good journey.
Good journey.